7:43, nearly. And gender equality can come in many forms. Unfortunately, in the case of this country, we're not doing so well when it comes to working conditions. The wage gap for male and female workers was 37%, according to figures for this year released by the OECD. That's the highest among member nations, which would all be considered developed countries. To address the issue, we have a very special guest joining us on the line today, UN Women Deputy Executive Director Åsa Regner, who also served as Sweden's Minister for Children and the Elderly and Minister for Gender Equality from 2014 to March before taking on her current post at UN Women. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And you were a speaker at the 12th Seoul ODA International Conference this week, speaking about the relationship between ODA, or Official Development Assistance, and human rights and gender equality. Can you elaborate on that connection, which I think intuitively we can probably see how they might intertwine, but not necessarily always so closely?
Yes, thank you very much. As you might know, the National Agency for Cooperation here in Korea is called KOIKA. And KOIKA uses money, public money, to support different development objectives, and one of them being gender equality in the world. So the UN, the United Nations, and the part that I represent, UN Women, work together with KOIKA to empower women in the world in relation to very important things like education for girls, to create conditions for girls so that they can go to school, for instance, to fight child marriages, to tell girls about the rights they have to education, and that girls are not, nobody can force girls to instead take up unpaid work, like taking care of her siblings instead of going to school, and all of that. So UN Women and KOIKA, we have lots of programs in the countries with less incomes, especially targeting girls and women in order to support their rights implementation.
But here you are this week in this highly developed country, South Korea, and we're still talking about gender inequality here compared with countries in need of assistance. And that's where South Korea was just a few decades ago. How concerning is that for you?
It is concerning for everyone who's interested in democracy and human rights and equality in general. Unfortunately, there is no country in the world which has reached a total gender equality. In all countries in the world, men are actually privileged as group for being men. Men have more power, higher incomes, and more to say in all societies than women. That is also true for my home country, Sweden, although we have the lowest rates of inequality in the world as well. So I think that experience shows us that the first step is really to identify the gender injustice. And in Korea, it's important to do that mapping, I think. And then every country has to take measures to address those that inequality, because it never happens just like that. It's not automatic. You have to always work for gender equality. Since this is an issue of power, and power doesn't just shift from one day to the other.
I'm interested in your background working with Sweden, because we often look to Scandinavian countries generally as an example to follow. Is it possible, though, with the vast cultural differences and the vast historical difference as well, to just take a model for another country, given how Sweden's situation has developed for centuries and attitudes towards women were very different there 1,000 years ago compared with Korea, for example? You can't just undo that period of time.
I think that countries should always find their own models, but it's also not true that Swedish people have an equal gene or something. I see gender equality very much as a political success. And I think that you have to always negotiate some kind of contract in a society to move towards gender equality. In the case of my home country, Sweden, we, for instance, had pretty high levels of maternal mortality over 100 years ago, and now we have almost zero. And that is because doctors, politicians, women's organizations, children's organizations came together and just decided this is unacceptable. We know how to do it, so we'll allocate money, we'll just create a society where we eliminate maternal mortality. Just one example. So change is absolutely possible, and that is also true for wage differences, as you were mentioning, daycare for children, to organize elderly care so that women are not stuck with enormous responsibilities that they just can't combine with paid work, for instance. So I think that every country has to do the analysis and then take the measures necessary, but it is possible to do that. And that is, I think, to come back to the development assistance. It's possible in any country. It might just take longer in a country that is war-torn, for instance, or where lots of things are just not in place in terms of institutions, democracy, etc.
Right. And also, if we take a very real example, let's say my own workplace, if we were to have staff members who are men and women doing the same job, it would be just highly strange to even suggest that the women would be paid less than the men. In other words, intuitively and naturally, I don't really understand how we get into this situation in the first place. What do we do to explain this 37% gender gap for wages with South Korea? Is that more about getting paid different wages for the same jobs, or is it more about men getting promoted more quickly, perhaps having more contacts after doing military service, or what else? What can we do to explain it?
Yeah, I would have to analyze that exact figure. But I think that what normally happens in workplaces is that, first of all, women normally work part-time to a larger extent than men. I'm not sure that that is an important factor here. But part-time work, more of temporary work, lose their connections to the labor market, all of that normally harms women so that they get less paid. But it's also true that we undervalue in general the kinds of jobs that women work or are overrepresented in. And I would say we overrate the traditional male jobs. We just have different perceptions of women and men. And there are actually tools also, that the examples that you took, if you have, for instance, journalists with the same education and the same experience working together, there are tools to actually compare and see whether there is a gender biased salary going on or not. So one thing is to compare, as you say, the exact same job and the exact same background. Another thing, which is normally the problem, the bigger problem in societies, is that typical female jobs are very undervalued. Although at the same time, we often humanly value those kinds of jobs very much, like care, like teaching, taking care of others.
I just want to address, for the sake of perhaps people coming from what's sometimes perceived as a conservative position, how we should address in the 21st century the question of women staying at home to look after kids and making that choice to do so. I, again, speaking from my own personal experience, I think my babies were very keen on their mother being with them as much as possible in their infancy. Moreover, my earnings became my wife's earnings in that situation. And for me, the work she was doing was probably much tougher than the work I was doing. But there was no sense of this being my money and, you know, her not earning money. Do we need to rethink this traditional model in the 21st century to come to an easier balance in times that, you know, it feels like the whole concept of the family is under threat in some people's view anyway?
Yeah. I think that what normally a society needs a big labor force. They need for both women and men to take up paid work. And nowadays in many countries, not the poorest countries, but in many countries, women and girls have just as high education as men, and sometimes even have higher levels of formal education. So in most societies, it's very wise from the state side to organize society so that both women and men can take care of small children, but also take up paid work, and thus contribute to economic growth, pay taxes, and what have you.
Yes.
Also, from a child's perspective, again, since I do come from a country where we have had lots of social securities, parentally, for instance, with strong incentives also for fathers to be present fathers in their children's lives, we know now, a generation later, that both children and fathers value a lot that connection that they have, the closeness for a child to have two parents to turn to when things get tough, for instance, also much later in life.
Yes.
Or for fathers to feel, I was actually there.
I couldn't agree more with that side. And actually, concluding that part of the story I gave before, I'm now playing that role in the afternoons from sort of lunchtime onwards, and it's quite an someone should be filming it. There are lots of comical moments, but it's generally very enriching, and I recommend it to
and
fathers out there if you can.
It for the rest of your life and make you really happy when you have that closeness to your older children, I guess.
Yeah, well, and also my wife says to me that, yeah, daughters in particular. There's a whole different psychological impact of having a father very present in your life, but sons in an equal manner, I'm sure, too. Without you know, drawing in too much of a personal sphere, can we just finish with UN Women's efforts to try to continue to realize gender equality? It's such a big battle globally. In your position, with all your experience, you must feel like, you know, sometimes you're just up against an impossible challenge. What do you do next?
Well, first of all, I don't think it is impossible. I think that change is possible, as I said, and that's why I wanted to join UN Women. I was a happy minister, but I'm also very happy to have taken up this job at UN Women, because we are in a situation right now, I would say, where more and more countries are actually going into being middle-income countries, and where you really have a possibility to work with both political decisions and money as investments to support gender equality. And I actually do see that more and more countries understand both the rights logic but also the economical logic in these investments in women and girls. And I just want to, you know, to be there and support that. In very concrete terms, in one country, it means to fight child or very forced marriages at a very early age.
Right.
In all countries, almost, it's about fighting violence against women and to support...
Also, Regna, I'm sorry to jump in there, but thank you
yes.
so much for
Absolutely.
Joining us today.
Thanks a lot.